The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Oh, I'm sure I'm the same as you, Howard. Fit to be tied.
All right. So, in fact, I'm feeling a little bit better, and you want to know why?
Tell me why.
Because Itai Melchior from the trade office is in studio, and his response to this article in the Mail in Guardian is simply, meanwhile in Kenya, ...
Well, and not just in Kenya, in Rwanda as well, ... I think a lovely, vibrant new embassy will be built.
Absolutely. So we're trying to feel a little bit better about ourselves. But in the meantime, Rolene, I wanted to take a moment and read to our listeners some of the article that I wrote earlier and that I've submitted. I think Israel Link is going to be publishing it. I have sent it to the Mail and Guardian in response to the article by Musa Abu Mazouk, and who is a member of Hamas that the Mail and Guardian decided to give a platform to. So I'm just going to read a little bit of the article just to give our listeners a sense as to what we are talking about. My response to the Mail and Guardian is Hamas lies and the Mail and Guardian. So here's a question. Should the Mail and Guardian be asking any questions about their columnists? Should they be concerned as to whom they provide a platform to and what hate they're allowing to be published to follow an agenda, whatever that might be? And if so, what, if anything, should concern them about giving a platform to someone who might espouse a dangerous and hateful doctrine? Or in the name of freedom of speech, does anything go? I am a Jew and a Zionist. I support the Jewish right to self-determination, the goal of a two-state solution where Jew and Palestinian can live side by side in peace. The simple question that the Mail and Guardian could, of course, ask their esteemed columnist Musa Abu Mazouk, a senior member of the terror organization Hamas, is if he too supports the concept of a two-state solution. We know his answer because the Hamas charter is clear. There will be no Jew left in Israel if Hamas has its way. Jews have experienced ethnic cleansing before. Where Europe rid itself of its Jews in the Holocaust, Hamas's intentions is to do the same in Israel. One wonders, given that the Mail and Guardian is happy to become a mouthpiece of Hamas, how the paper feels about the intention to ethnically cleanse the ancestral homeland of the Jewish people. Why would the Mail and Guardian choose to be complicit in such evil? Is it because of freedom of speech? And if there's any doubt as to the intention of Hamas, the 850,000 Jews that were expelled from the Arab countries when Israel became a state in 1948 pretty much settles it. Should the Mail and Guardian be concerned even a tiny bit that Hamas has not allowed free democratic elections in Gaza, that they routinely throw gay people off buildings, that they use women and children as human shields, that they utilize aid money intended for schools and hospitals and infrastructure for constructing terror tunnels, that they educate their children to hate Jews, to sing songs about killing them, and to dress them up in suicide vests to make it a reality? Should it be concerned that the esteemed Musa Abu Mazouk has been implicated in terror activities in the United States during success? American administrations, Obama and Trump, and is banned from traveling to the USA? Or is it again because freedom of speech? Regarding Mazouk's accusations that Israel seized Gaza, should the Mail and Guardian not inform its readers that Egypt too closed its borders with Gaza because of Hamas's destructive behavior? If there is no obligation on the Mail and Guardian also to inform that Egypt too has flooded the tunnels on its border because of Hamas using them to cause murder and mayhem in Egypt, is it perhaps not worth mentioning that the aerial wars that Israel launched against Gaza was a defensive response to thousands upon thousands of rockets that Hamas fired into areas in Israel over months and months, at schools and at villages and at civilians? Or that it was triggered by the kidnapping of three Israeli schoolboys who they shot and murdered in cold blood for no reason other than their hatred of Jews? Because what? Freedom of speech? It's fairly simple for the Mail and Guardian. All they need to do is take a quick look at the Hamas charter to get a sense of what the esteemed Musa Abu Mazouk really stands for. For ease of reference, I even provide the link. It took me just a few minutes to browse through it, and I would encourage the Mail and Guardian to do the same. Hamas does not desire peace, it will not recognize Israel's right to exist, and it will not disarm. Worse, it would subscribe to another final solution for Jews of Israel. Hamas is a terror organization, just like ISIS, but with one difference. Unlike ISIS, Hamas' intended victims are mostly Jews. and with the Mail and Guardian providing a platform to Hamas's premier spokesman, the publication needs to be aware that in doing so, it becomes complicit in promoting murder. So I sent it to the Mail and Guardian a little bit earlier. You might be surprised, Rolene, to know that they haven't responded.
I'm shocked. Who'd have thought? First of all, I want to say congratulations and kol hakavod on an excellent op-ed piece, and it most certainly will be going on Israel Link within the next couple of hours, and we will then be putting it up on our Facebook page. So keep an eye out for that, and as soon as it's up, we will share as far and wide as possible, because I think that we need to remind readers exactly who we are dealing with when we are speaking about Hamas. This is not a political party that is the voice of the suffering. This is an internationally recognized terror organization. This is an organization, as you mentioned in your op-ed, that has a charter, whether or not they've decided to change the text. The subtext of that charter is still very, very clear, and that is the destruction of Israel and the destruction of its Jewish population. So I think that we need to be very, very cognizant that before we see some kind of legitimization or normalization of Hamas by allowing them a platform in mainstream media, exactly who we are dealing with, and any citizen of this country who is peace loving, who does support peace efforts in the Middle East as we do, who do support a two-state solution that is negotiated with mutually agreed security, should voice their discontent to the Mail and Guardian.
Absolutely right. Let's talk about Kerry for a moment. He says that Israel and Egypt pushed the U.S. To bomb Iran.
Well, John Kerry, the former Secretary of State, in his speech at the Ignatius Forum in Washington, spoke, I think, for about an hour, and he said that Prime Minister Netanyahu was genuinely agitating towards action. He said that both Israel and Egypt were pushing the United States to engage in some kind of military campaign or bomb Iran before the 2015 nuclear deal was eventually struck. And it seems to me that Kerry's got a gripe with Israel. He's almost got a pathological obsession with Israel. You know, he doesn't talk about concessions that Israel has made towards peace. He hasn't spoken about the wave of terror that we've endured. He hasn't spoken about concessions made by Israel. He just continuously goes after Netanyahu and the state of Israel. And perhaps it is because he has a dog in the race. He was one of the main architects or writers of the deal. And perhaps this is very, very personal for him, because there is a lot of objections to the deal, to say the least, from Israel. So, yeah, it just seems that former Secretary of State John Kerry, with his regards to Israel, continues to put his foot in his mouth in quite grand style.
Incredible. He really doesn't seem to be a balanced arbiter of peace at all in this regard. Pence says Trump is considering when and how to move the embassy.
Well, I know we are all watching eagerly. We are watching the embassy tango. Does it take two steps forward, three steps back to the side? Does it pivot? Oy vey, is there a dip involved? But Vice President Mike Pence, who was speaking at an event put on by the Israel Mission to the United Nations to mark 70 years since the passing of UN Resolution 181. This day, 70 years ago, this paved the way not just for Israel's creation, but for a partition that would allow for two states. Imagine the Arabs took advantage of the deal on the table at the time. Would the Israel report be talking about all the conflict? I don't think so.
It's interesting, because nobody ever talks about that. The fact that, you know, that they wipe out at all, completely, from the narrative. You read Jesse Duarte's article, and there's no mention of the fact that that they rejected this. Israel accepted it, and the Palestinians rejected it.
Well, they weren't Palestinians at the time. I mean, if we look at our history, Palestinians, as we know Palestinians today, only really came into existence in 1964. Mm-hmm. These were the Arabs at the time. They chose to forgo the deal, choosing instead to declare war on what was then a very, very newborn, fledgling modern Jewish state in our ancient homeland. And what we see today is really a selective omission of the facts. And I see today we've just got been notified of the United Nations in South Africa holding a solidarity seminar today in solidarity with the Palestinians. I mean, if that's not just flagrant bias of the modern day UN. But back in the day, the United Nations actually fulfilled what its mandates were all about. So if we just rewind the clock back 70 years, the original UN vote, which passed 33-13 with 10 abstentions, took place today, 70 years ago, and Vice President Pence was addressing an event then where he spoke about the fact that President Trump is weighing when and how to move the embassy. As we know, this will be no easy feat. There could be a lot of repercussions around this. And Pence said in his comments that Israel does not need or did not need a resolution to call for its existence because its right to exist is self-evident and timeless, adding that while Israel was built by human hands, it's impossible not to see the hand of heaven here too. And Vice President Pence will be in Israel in 2 weeks' time, just in time for Hanukkah. He's here to speak amongst a lot of things about the Christian persecution in the Middle East,
which is a very, very big issue and one that I've often spoken about. It's for some reason, it's just a real concern for me because I think that it's just another human rights abuse, which makes me very uncomfortable. Netanyahu and Kenyan president's inauguration.
Well, this is lovely. I mean, as Itai actually said at the beginning, and just a shout out to you and kol hakavod to the Israeli mission in South Africa. We here in Israel are kvelling. We could not be clapping more nachas with the Absolutely. Work that you are doing in South Africa. And so this is good news to come out of Israel. And it's just amazing to me that more and more African countries, whether it is receiving aid from Israel or signing new deals, the doors are opening. Africa is really, really showing Israel the love. And we intend to show the love right back. And this was evident in Prime Minister Netanyahu, who held bilateral meetings with various African leaders in Kenya. And he was there for President Kenyatta's inauguration. And he said, we want to work with you and each of your countries. We believe in Africa. And of course, there was the absolutely monumental declaration that we will be opening an embassy in Kigali, the capital of Rwanda. And I think it's resuming or starting direct flights between Israel and Rwanda for the first time in our history. And this is really, really something spectacular that we can sure be celebrating. And it's what also is quite amazing is that not only was Prime Minister Netanyahu there for the inauguration, where he congratulated President Kenyatta on the birth of his granddaughter, he also offered him a picture with a blessing for the newborn. So in true Israeli style, it is all about the mishpacha, all about the mishpoicha, and a blessing on his granddaughter. And while the Prime Minister was in Kenya, he has also met with the presidents of Gabon, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, South Sudan, Botswana and Namibia, and as well as Ethiopia.
Absolutely, absolutely amazing. Senior Fatah official says Iran is responsible for the Palestinian division.
Well, this I think all roads seem to lead back to Iran, and it's, mm-hmm. to me it's no coincidence, because who is the main sponsor of Hamas? It's Iran.
Right.
So if there is going to be dissension in the ranks, you can be sure that Iran, who has a dog in the race, really, really are instigating. And incidentally, dog in the race seems to be my catchphrase for the day. So Fatah Central Committee member Azam Al-Ahmad said yesterday that Iran is the top sponsor of Palestinian division between the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And he said that since Hamas had basically pushed the Palestinian Authority out from Gaza in 2007, the Iranian stronghold has increased. So he says, and I'm quoting him directly, he says, the first sponsor of the division is Iran. And this was with an interview with Saudi-owned Al Arabiya News. Now, as we know, and we've been following it very closely, in fact, it's one of the top stories we've been speaking about for a number of weeks, the Sunni-Shiite axis with Iran basically at the helm of the Shiite axis and Saudi Arabia at the helm of the Sunni axis. So I don't know if it is pandering to the news or playing the media game, but these were his comments to Al Arabiya.
Very, very interesting indeed. What do you make of the whole Mandla Mandela story?
Okay, so here are my thoughts. And I mean, you know, I've dusted off the soapbox that lives.
It wasn't so dusty. It wasn't so dusty. I'm just saying.
I took it out yesterday. Well, first of all, I think that we need to remember that Mandla Mandela obviously needs a little bit of attention because any coverage of him in the news.
He's been married. He's been married four times so far. So clearly he needs a lot of attention. I'm just saying.
Yes, well, he's been married, but there's also that mysterious charge against him for road rage and assault, where apparently he actually withdrew his firearm and assaulted and threatened the complainant so badly that he couldn't work. His speech was affected. So this goes to show you what kind of a person Mandela is. Also, I read, as I do the statement from BDS. You see, guys, I follow you as well. Thanks for including me on your mailing list. And it looks like the trip was sponsored and organized by BDS South Africa, who actually gave their details if we wanted to book an interview with Mr. Mandela. So I think that his comment and his decision was already made for him before he even left South Africa. I don't think he even needed to travel to the West Bank or to the Gaza Strip to make the comments that he made. And yeah. I found it very interesting that in their press release, he talks about coming here to talk about peace. And if you're going to talk about peace, you're following the example of your incredible, iconic grandfather who spoke to all sides, to all parties.
I just feel sad for the Mandela family that that really all they've got left is their name. And here we go, somebody, the grandson, selling it just for a bit of publicity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a very, very sad turn of events, but it couldn't have been more well choreographed than BDS if they tried. And I think even if he had taken a trip to Outer Mongolia, he still would have made the comments he made because he really didn't have to visit here. His statements were well prepared for him.
Absolutely, no doubt. Time is 5:52, about to go 5:53. That's Rolene Marks with the Israel Report. We'll be chatting to Rolene Marks same time, same place tomorrow. The Israel Report brought to you by the Blue Agency.